Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Old Ways Cheese Coalition, an organization dedicated to supporting artisanal, raw milk, and traditional cheesemaking around the world, and ensuring everyone can choose their cheese of choice. For more information, visit oldwayscheese.org.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze. We have a full house here in the studio today. The Marcelli family is here. Hello, Bob, Andy, and Tina.
Hello.
Hi, Greg.
Super glad you're here. Thanks so much for coming up to Brooklyn to talk cheese on this rainy afternoon. So for those of you who don't know the name Marcelli, these guys and gals are importing cheeses from Abruzzo, Italy, that are made in and near their family's ancestral village of Anversa by their cousins and friends of the family. They're also importing some other great artisan products, from olive oil to the best honey I've ever had, and also the best dried pasta I've ever had, and they're all made in Abruzzo. Their company, Marcelli Formaggi, has been recently featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Wine and Spirits Magazine, and more. So first of all, congrats on all the buzz lately. I wanted to start off by asking you, Bob, how you guys came to start this family business.
A wing and a prayer.
Yeah.
No, actually, we had made the first ever visit to our ancestral home, where I met my cousin Nunzio for the first time. And we learned that they had a sheep farm and an agriturismo. And he kind of offhandedly said, you know, we have sheep, so we make cheese. And I went, oh, that's very interesting. We tasted the cheese, and I looked at him, and I said, oh, you don't make cheese. You make cheese.
Nice, nice. That's the beginning. When that, was that?
That was in, I think that was 2002.
And was that when you started bringing in the cheese, or did it take a little while?
No, it was the truth is that my father had never been to where his parents were from. It was very emotional for us. We were very, very moved by this little tiny medieval village, population 350, where we learned we were related to half of the people in the village. And he wanted to do something with the family in the village. And slowly it began to dawn on me that the cheese was really the thing, so that there would be an economic, you know, a partnership between the family. So, but it took about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, maybe 4 years, to convince my cousin that not only was this a good idea, but it was something that we could actually do. So
repeated visits.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, you guys are a culinary family in general. Andy is a beer guy. He was just on Beer Sessions Radio a few weeks ago with Jimmy Carbone, and you should all check that out. Bob, you were named the James Beard Foundation Rising Chef in 1990, which is cool, and you have had a long career in food. And Tina, you are a pastry chef and have owned your own business and do lots of food-related stuff. You know, you guys, and I know you all well. I mean, it's food. We all live for food, I think, in this room, everybody, all of us.
We also have a chef brother as well.
Right. There are more Marcellis. This is as many Marcellis as I can fit into this room at once. How do you all relate to and approach cheese coming from these different culinary backgrounds? Like, what's your take on cheese, Andy? Like, how did you fall in love with this stuff?
Well, actually, it was through visiting my family in Italy because, you know, I went to business school, so I had a business degree and I had a marketing job out of college, and, you know, I was not in the food world. My plan was always to support my siblings who were, you know, chefs and go to their restaurants, not work in food, having grown up in restaurants, as with my father being a chef and owning restaurants when we were younger. But really, it was, you know, my I wasn't on that ancestral trip with the whole family. I was actually in California, and my dad called me from the trip and just said how excited he was, and you know, we needed to, you know, import this.
Need to get on it.
Yeah, and then a couple years later, when I was ready to make a move, I told him I'd give him a year to you know, help him figure it out, and that was about 9 years ago.
Nice. So, what is it like working as a family on building this company, Tina? You wanna jump in there and let us know?
Yes, it's really a lot of fun. It's great to be able to work with your family every day. You know, my mom has recently come on board. She retired from her career and basically, I think, took a Saturday off, and the very next day she was
employed
at the company. Yeah, so her retirement was basically 24 hours. But it's been really great to, as I said, you know, work together and learn from these guys, but also at the same time, you know, kind of earn my own stripes.
Sure.
You know, I'm the youngest, so that's kind of always my goal, is to show up and show that I can do it. So it's been a learning process and a great experience, and I can't wait for what's in store.
Right. But also, I think for her too, it's been a fun change. She's used to being in the kitchen, and now
right.
She's on the other side of the line talking to chefs. So it's a very comfortable environment for everybody.
Yeah. How do you go about finding your customers, or how have you historically found your customers? Word of mouth?
A lot of it is word of mouth. I'll give an example about our pasta, just
the pasta you guys bring in is amazing. It's the best dried pasta I've ever had.
Well, a lot of people share that opinion. Del Posto makes all of their own pasta. What they don't make, they only use ours, and they emphatically swear that this is really absolutely the best pasta that they've ever had.
That means a lot to us.
Really, of course. So do you find that, like, your business, the roots of your business are people that you do business with, a small amount of people, because you can't be able to bring in a lot of cheese, right? I mean, you say your village, your ancestral village, 350 people, of which are related to half, and then there's some sheep out there. So how much cheese do these guys really make? Like, how do you get this done?
Well, I'll give you an example. This breed of sheep, which is called a Sopravvisano,
uh-huh.
It's an ancient breed that was indigenous to Abruzzo. And at one point in time, there were 3 million of these sheep. Today, there's only maybe 300,000 at the most. And my cousin has about 1,300 sheep. They produce one-fifth of the milk of a normal breed of sheep.
Right.
So you say 1,300 sheep. Oh, my God, that's a lot. But when you consider...
Yeah, they're little animals, and they don't give up a lot of milk.
No, they don't.
That's awesome. So I got another question for you guys. Raw Milk Cheese Appreciation Day is coming up on April 16th. For those of you who don't know what that is, check out theoldwayscheese.com. It's an international celebration of raw milk cheese that's sponsored by the Cheese Coalition, formerly known as the Cheese of Choice Coalition. They're one of our sponsors and friends of the show. I wanted to ask you guys and gal, what are your thoughts on raw milk cheese as it relates to your cheese specifically?
Well, I mean, all the cheeses we carry cheeses from our family's farm, as well as a couple other producers in their cooperative, are all raw milk cheeses. So to us, they're very traditional. But also, when we're meeting someone and talking about our products, we talk about terroir, what the sheep are eating, the over 100 wild herbs and flowers in the grass that the sheep are eating. So, you know, their diet, everything also, you know, the low milk yielding factor, so the milk is very rich. So for us, like, raw milk is very important because it's preserving all of that. Because if we were then talking about, okay, then it's all pasteurized, then half of what we just said is kind of lost.
Yeah, completely. What do you got to take on that, Bob?
Well, I think that the thing
that's
about,
really well said,
about raw milk cheese is that it really preserves everything. And what we find when we taste our cheese with chefs is that's the first thing that they remark about. It's like it's just the real, it's the pristine flavors of each of the different cheeses. And just a little side thing, when I was a young boy, my grandfather would instruct us on you know, things that were important to know and to carry with you through your life.
The Italian grandfather.
The Italian.
Sure.
Alfonso Marcelli. And Alfonso was from this village. And Alfonso is the brother of Nunzio's, you know.
Nunzio being the cheesemaker.
The cheesemaker. And he said in his wonderful Italian accent, don't eat of the process of food. Don't eat of the process of cheese because it's a no good. He said they kill all of the good bacteria.
And he's right.
And if you don't have the good bacteria, yeah, it's a no good. So
well done.
Yeah, but that's the simple truth. And for those guys, I mean, they've been making cheese. How many generations has Nunzio's farm been producing cheese?
Well, they started the farm in 1977 officially. But again, our family has been in that village since the 1500s. So my guess is that
there's been some cheese made.
Somebody along the way has made cheese.
What do you think about raw milk cheese, Dana?
I think they both put it perfectly. You know, I think it's a beautiful. You're welcome.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. You know, and Andy's exactly correct. I think raw milk is great because it keeps the base of the product in its most natural and glorious form, and it really lets it transcend to the end result, which is somebody eating the cheese and experiencing it.
That's the best. I mean, and I'm cutting the curd. We're always pushing the raw milk cheese on everybody. You know what I mean? Have you found any difficulties in bringing the cheeses in because they're raw?
Actually, that's been surprising that it hasn't been a problem. As you know, all raw milk cheese has to be aged for a minimum of
60 days.
And, you know, we stick to that, you know, strictly. And the farm does a great job of, maintaining, the particular dates and everything. So it's not really, it has been.
But they're also, the farm itself is actually also EU certified organic. So
great. They're
inspected very regularly. I mean, I've been there at least in 3 or 4 different times over the years where they've been inspected. So, because I think the EU organic seal is a very, I like to say highly regarded thing. But so they're keep doing it the right way all the time.
And you guys bring in so you have your pasta and you have your cheese, but you also have honey that I think that is incredible. And what makes you guys bring in such great honey? What is it? Is it the terroir again? Was it just that something you discovered after you started bringing in the cheese?
Well, when we first had the cheese, you always have it with honey. And so it was kind of the same reaction. It's like, oh, my God, this cheese is incredible. It's like, whoa, this honey is incredible. It turns out that Abruzzo is considered to be the green heart of Europe, not just of Italy, but of Europe. And what that means is that there's more national park space than any other area in Europe. Historically, Abruzzo had been economically challenged because of its the landscape being incredibly rugged, so difficult to import and export from. So there was not a lot of work, and there's certainly never really been any heavy industry to speak of. The good news is that because there was no heavy industry, it's remained incredibly pristine. And so what does that translate to? That translates to literally every food product that is produced there is really some of the best that you'll find anywhere.
And of course, and you have and you believe that because that's where you're from.
But it's true.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I mean, I've been lucky. I met Andy and Bob in the Bedford Cheese Shop. I think in 2000, maybe 2009.
Yeah.
My friend Charlotte was like, these dudes are coming in. I don't know anything about them, but they have some good cheese. And I was like, I'm game. I like cheese. And you guys brought me in some of the just probably the best sheep cheese that had come out of Italy that I had ever had. I think I tasted the Pecorino Gregoriano, which is a staple of your collection, the Pecorino Parco, and maybe some Pecorino Brigantaccio, all of which were comprise a core of products. And I've watched your company grow from that spot, which has been really, really cool, you know. And I think now I know that, I mean, I know you distribute to us in the tri-state area, but what's your plans for Marcelli Formaggi in the future? Are you guys going to blow it up, or are you comfortable keeping it small, you know? I mean, everybody knows about you now. I mean, you're in the Wall Street Journal. You know, you're in Del Posto. You know, I mean, people are like pimping you out. They like your stuff. So how are you going to keep it? How are you going to keep it so your regular customers get the things they had, and you know, and then the quality stays the same?
Don't worry, Craig. We always got you.
You're damn straight. I mean, I need my stuff.
Well, one of the things that's very important to us is that we hand sell our cheese, and it's really about relationships. People trust us. The chefs trust
absolutely
us. And that's, you know, the cheesemongers trust us. There's only so big that we can get. We have a funny saying. I don't know if it's a good business practice or not, but we only sell the people that we like.
That's great.
And we really like everyone that we sell to.
So if you want their cheese, you better be nice to these guys. You know what I mean?
That's right.
be kind.
No, but it's true. And I've had lots of, you know, and as I've done the show, as we've done the show, we've had some cheese selling, cheese slinging, cheese making families in here, you know. And one of the best things about it, because I know you guys and I know how close you all are, I think it's really cool that you were able to bring your whole family into that, and it would make sense that the customers that you have are a reflection of how you are, and they uphold the same values that you do. You know, it's I just think it must be tough to manage just having that level of product, which is very high, and that scarcity of it. I know that when I buy cheese as a retail purchaser, when cheese comes in, it's like Santa Claus is there, you know what I mean? It's all these packages, and I'm really excited because stuff's coming in, and then half of it shows up, and then the other half of it doesn't show up, and then some of it shows up in not the best shape, and then you go back to the farm, and you're like, so I asked you for 50 of these, and I got like 5. So what's up with that? I mean, it must be tough because you're managing your family on the other end. It's all family. Would you agree with that?
So I think that one of the things that we have going for us is the fact that, you know, all of our chefs, customers, friends, they all, they know our story. So they understand it's kind of the nature of what it is that we're bringing in, you know, and it's kind of a lighthearted, you know, hey, do you have the manteca today? And, you know, oh, we wish we did.
Yeah, just, yeah, yeah.
You know. But it's the nature of it. And, you know, I think when people have an appreciation of where it's coming from, you know, it's not something that's mass produced.
Sure.
And that's kind of the whole appeal to it.
And that's classic cheese shop mentality anyway. Like, I never have like 60% of my items in stock. When did you know that you were going to work, Tina, for Marcelli Formaggi? How did they get you to join their motley crew?
Well, you know, their timing was
perfect.
It's perfect, if not strategic. But I was just finishing up a 3-year opportunity at a job and was kind of looking for the next thing, and you know, knew that I didn't quite want to go back into the kitchen yet. And you know, along the way, I've discovered that I really like sales and branding and things like that. So you know, and obviously it's my family, and I'm passionate about them and the cheese. So my dad approached me and said, you know, the company is growing, you know, and I see
need you.
Right. you know, we'd be thrilled to have you on and help to build and brand it and, you know, work with your brother. And well, then I was like, well, forget it.
Yeah, this guy.
But, no.
This wasn't my idea.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's why this is so much fun, this type of stuff. But, yeah, and I said, you know what, let's do it. And it's been great. And out of everybody, I think I was the one that knew the least about the cheese. So,
right.
You know, because when they were starting it, I was still, you know, working in city kitchens and stuff like that. So I've learned a lot in a short amount of time, and it's been great.
It's good to get you out of the kitchen. You can come with the other humans, you know what I mean, up above ground.
Yes.
We got windows.
Right. Yeah, now I actually have to talk to
people. Yeah, people coming in and out.
Well, I think one thing that we've seen as we're growing slowly but surely is, as a family, we all bring different things to the table.
Sure.
It's like perfect fit. So my father obviously has a long career as being a chef and knows food, knows that world. Myself, I have, you know, a business degree in marketing, so that in the beginning is what, you know, what we needed. And my sister, obviously, from working inside of a kitchen as well as in her last job working on branding. And then my mom, who's like, you know,
takes care of you all.
She's literally the one, you know, she's been the woman behind my dad for, you know, their, you know, entire life together.
That's sweet.
Super supportive, but also she's extremely organized, as coming from the healthcare industry. And before that, she was running restaurants with my father. So, like, all of us together, we, you know, we meet on a weekly basis, and we're like, okay, well, you can do that, you can do that, you can do that. And, like, the math, the whole equation works really well with all of us and what we're all good at. So, it's all together, we kind of have, like, the complete package.
That's rad, man. Well, Marcelli Formaggi is a true family business from top to bottom. So, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Abruzzo, the land and the animals.
Old Ways Cheese Coalition, an organization dedicated to supporting artisanal cheesemaking traditions through advocacy, education, and outreach, is calling on all you turophiles to rally and celebrate Raw Milk Cheese Appreciation Day on Saturday, April 16th. More than 400 events in 10 countries will highlight the distinctive cultural heritage of raw milk cheeses. From tastings in Denver to special classes in Sao Paulo, producers will offer samples in San Francisco, and cheesemongers will share their love of fromage au lait cru in Paris and Boston. Show your appreciation for raw milk cheese on April 16th and find an event near you at oldwayscheese.org. And if you really love traditional and raw milk cheeses, the Old Ways Cheese Coalition invites you to become a member and support its work preserving these artisanal cheeses. Sign up now and get a free year subscription to Culture Magazine. Visit oldwayscheese.org for more. Have you listened to A Taste of the Past? It's a show devoted to connecting our current food world with its storied past. Host and culinary historian Linda Palacio welcomes chefs, scientists, authors, scholars, and revolutionaries into the studio to discuss food culture and history from around the globe.
Have you seen the culture of food change over the past 25, 30 years?
Incredible. It's been incredible.
Linda covers content ranging from the history of black chefs in the White House to behavioral psychology and the evolution of Italian food in America. You can listen to A Taste of the Past anytime on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes and Stitcher.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. This is Greg Blaze. And before the break, I was talking with Bob, Andy, and Tina Marcelli of Marcelli Formaggi, importers of artisan cheese from Abruzzo. For this next half of the show, I wanted to talk about the region of Abruzzo a little bit more. You know, Bob, you had touched on the landscape of Abruzzo and, you know, and it being the sort of green heart of Europe. I wanted you to talk specifically to us for a minute about Anversa, what makes Anversa, the town where your family hails from, special. Can you sort of paint a picture for us of the landscape and people there?
The village of Anversa, it's Anversa degli Abruzzi,
uh-huh.
Which is a tiny little village. Built on the side of a mountain and surrounded by mountains. It's really, really dramatic. You're like looking over cliffs. Anversa historically was famous for the ceramic industry.
Uh-huh.
It was the home to a lot of artisans. So historically, you know, what's being produced there now, it's just a part of their history. It's a little, you know, it's very, very tiny. There's one main road that goes in and out of town. There's an uptown and a downtown.
All right.
We live downtown, not too far from the piazza. And the piazza typically is the center of life in these little villages.
Yeah, totally.
You know, there's, and it turns out, interestingly enough, that our family history is food.
The Marcelli family.
The Marcelli history. Family, in, and that also my grandmother, Italian grandmother's dad was a chef. Anyways, they've owned most of the food businesses that are in the village. And there are a couple of little bars. My other cousin has the one restaurant that's in the village. And it's really, everyone, of course, knows everyone. It's just quiet. There's nothing.
It's like a time capsule, right? I mean, it's like.
Absolutely. And there's nothing to do. And I mean that in the most
amazing.
Wonderful, wonderful way. When we first went there, we had blocked out, I think, 3 days to stay in the village, in addition to going to, you know, Florence and Rome and Venice. And I said to my brothers, I mean, really, what the hell are we going to do in this little village for 3 days? I mean, we're in Italy, for God's sakes. Well, by the end of the first day, it just had really taken me over. It's a beautiful place. The people are warm and friendly. You know, there's the typical characters that you'll find in a village, which happens to be some of our relatives. And it's just peaceful.
That's amazing. I mean, New Yorkers, we need to decompress. So I mean, going to places like that is, you know, I mean, when I travel to places like that, it takes me a minute to wind down. Because at first I'm like that. I'm like, so where do we go? What do we do? We mean there's no fucking streetlights here. Right. I mean, how does that work? Right. How do I not get hit by a car? Oh, wait, there's no cars?
There aren't any streetlights.
Yeah, when we're there, it's the silence that actually keeps me up at night.
That's amazing, right? That's cool.
I wanted to say that it brings us great, great satisfaction to be able to, you know, in a way, bring this region and this town to the world. You know, we kind of see ourselves as a vehicle of bringing these treasures, these products from these small producers and families to a place like, for example, New York City, where they never would have really been able to get. You know, so we feel really great about that. And also, you know, we have a little house there, you know, pretty much has an open door, and we've had a lot of our chef customers and friends go and stay there.
Oh, that's
and,
fantastic.
And yeah, it's wonderful. They get to spend time on the farm. They can make cheese. They can, you know, befriend a sheepdog or seven. you know, so it's really it's great. We're I feel in a way as though we're really you know, giving back to the town where our ancestors are from.
And then for chefs and food people in general, especially that work in the city, I mean, that's like the ultimate connection is to be able to go to those places. Did some of the feedback you get for the people who've traveled over there, do your products really, you know, they hit home? So when they eat that. And then they travel there post-eating that. Do they get it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think sometimes they don't want to come back.
Yeah, I think they never probably want to come back.
For example, we just had one of the sous chefs from Del Posto there with his fiance, and he... Oh, the pictures we were getting. I mean, you know, he was making cheese and meeting with Nunzio, and then he went to the pasta family, their manufacturing center, and it was wonderful. They I think they have an appreciation to begin with, but then once they go and they see it, they really, really get it.
Yeah, and I think that's also part of what we're doing, is because it is an imported product. So not everybody can do that. We encourage as many people as possible. We tell them, like, look, just get yourself to Rome, and it's an hour and a half there. We'll have somebody pick you up or take a train, take a bus. But that's the challenge, as opposed to being like, hey, we're from upstate New York. Like,
sure,
we'll drive you up there right now. Like, we have a lot of storytelling to do, and that is the upfront part of it. And then, you know, whenever we're doing a tasting or whatever, talking to anybody that we do business with, it's like, it's the story, and then they taste it, and they say, okay, we get it, but we, you know, we hope that more, you know, more people can go over there to really experience this.
Well, one of the things that Bobby spoke before, but it's in this big sort of, not bowl of mountains, but this big sort of roll of mountains there, and on the show in this season, we've had some episodes about transhumans. So maybe one of you guys or gal could speak to us about the transhumans and the role that it plays in Abruzzo and how important it is in Abruzzo, because our last guest was in the Alps, you know, and so she was trying to protect this practice, which is rapidly disappearing,
right.
Because it's a rugged lifestyle to go up on the goddamn mountain and go with the animals and then live up there and then bring them all the way back down. Talk to me about that.
They don't do it with ATVs.
No.
Actually, you know, we are incredibly proud of our family there. You know, Nunzio and his kids and Manuela have done this remarkable job of really creating something that is a part of history. And the Transamanza is such an integral part of the world. It's the simple, it's the life of the shepherd. It's the shepherd, the sheep, and the dogs in the cycle of time. You know, the spring, the summer, the fall, taking the animals up to the summer pastures, which is just the most beautiful, beautiful place. I mean, just the rolling, the hills, the grass, the dogs, the sheep.
Nice sheep noise.
lots of good sheep noise. And people come from all over the world to do this. And they've become very kind of well known for this practice.
Your family.
Yeah. Our family.
Especially on social media.
Yes.
Which is the modern thing now.
It's what all the kids are doing.
The kids. and the life of a shepherd is really, really not quite as lonely as it was before, but
right.
But in the pastures, in the park where the shepherds live, it's a simple house, fireplace, certainly no electricity.
Right. Don't have a good internet connection up there.
Well, the Wi-Fi, I think, isn't bad because,
oh, that's good.
You know, people can't live without their cell phones.
No.
And they bring in food. Of course, they eat a little lamb and they eat cheese and have lots of bread. But it's a very, I think, lonely solitude kind of an existence.
But that's the key, right?
The beauty of it.
The transhumans, that's like the heart of the cheese making or of that pastoral and agrarian lifestyle that they promote, right?
I correct.
Mean, that's it.
That's it.
You know? That's what gives the cheese its flavor. That's what gives the animals its their exercise. And that's the sort of metronome, right? Like, that's the sort of the clock that everybody's on up there, which is great, you know? I mean, the guy that we talked with before was talking about cows. I mean, do they listen? Do they like the trip up the mountain? And have any of you guys ever made the trip up the mountain with the sheep?
I've done part of it. I know my brother did. My brother Mike, he spent two kind of long, like 9-month trips a couple years apart there. I think he did the full thing. It's something, yeah, we all would like to do it. It takes, you know, it's like a couple, I don't know, it's like
you gotta give up some time
like
to do that. Yeah.
So unfortunately, a lot of times when we're there, we're like, we're moving all around the region. We're spending as much time on the farm and the village as possible. But it's something, we have friends that have done it. They do it every few weeks, really, because what they do is, of the 1,300 sheep, they move the majority of the herd, and they leave about 200 to 300 on the farm to do the daily, just, you know, going up and down the mountain, doing the milking.
Sure.
And the rest are just chilling out, like eating and walking around, and then they rotate. So they do that. Moving of the animals every few weeks, pretty much.
That's fantastic. So we got the town, we got the region, we got the animals, we got the transhumans. So tell us a little bit about the cheeses. Are the cheeses that you guys sell, are they very much indicative of traditional cheeses of the region? And if so, how?
Well, I mean, I would say especially like the Pecorino de Parco is a very classic style mountain, you know, as you probably have a lot of experience with those cheeses.
Completely.
From Abruzzo. But obviously not many cheeses from Abruzzo actually make it to the U.S. because of the remoteness of it. And I think the aged ricotta, the smoked ricotta, it's traditional but also unique.
Yeah.
So, like Nunzio's answer to, like, okay, I'm making all this Pecorino, now I have all the sheep smoked ricotta, and there's only so much fresh ricotta you can go through. Like, how do I age it, and how do I do it in a way that's
I really feel like those are so signature items of Marcelli Formaggi. And in the studio, these guys, they're a little bit out of my arm's reach, but I'm going to get to them afterwards. They've got a little bit, if there's any left. They've got a couple cheeses in here, one new one that they're going to tell me about. But there's a ricotta here that's made out of cow's milk, right?
Yep.
The Pizzata Rosa. Yep. And it's covered in chives. It's one of my favorite Marcelli cheeses. It's indestructible. It lasts literally forever. It's versatile. It's good for a snack. It's good to cook with. And I love chives and everything. Yeah. So maybe you can tell me what
but
that cheese is all about.
It's also like the appearance of it. It's so strikingly white.
Yeah.
You think it's like ricotta salata or something, but it's not. It's Pizzata Rosa. It's made by Claudio. He's one of the producers in the cooperative.
So there's some cows roaming around there too.
Yeah, and it's funny. We visited him a few times. It's like really hard to find, of course. Like, you know, he's like, go to this one town and then take this unmarked road. And, one of the things I found recently, as we mentioned earlier, that I'm a beer person and I work in beer. So we did a beer and cheese event at Brooklyn Brewery. They had a sour, a bottle share. Last week that Tina and I were there for, which was great. We brought four cheeses. And in the process of trying to figure out which of our cheeses to have that night to go with sour beers, we were just trying this chive ricotta. And I was like, you know, I don't think we're going to find a sour beer to go with this cheese because it has such like onion, you know.
Chives are pretty potent, which is why I like them. And then I find that with cheese, especially fresher cheese, usually I had it with goat cheeses, they don't mask, but they go really well with sort of the acidity of those cheeses.
So as we were talking through it, I was like, well, you know, one of the things I love about this cheese is that it reminds me of when we were kids, we had Philadelphia cream cheese with chives like in the refrigerator all the time. Just an easy thing to put on bagels and whatever.
Sure.
So this cheese always reminds me of that. So we're talking about the onion factor, and the person I was tasting the cheese with, we tried like a pale ale, like thinking like the hoppy, you know, earthiness of it would work for it. But like, no, it needs something like bready, like something like bread. So we tried it with Brooklyn Lager because this was at Brooklyn Brewery, and it's perfect. It's because the Vienna malt, it kind of does like a bagel and cream cheese thing to it. My sister and dad have actually tried this before because I've been having everybody try it for like the last week since we tried it together.
Nice.
But what do you think? How's it work together? Good?
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, the Pizzata Rosa ricottas are great. And then you guys have a new cheese. So when you go to check out their website and you go under their cheeses to see their list of cheeses, you'll see some of this stuff. But they brought in something new. Now, I was lucky enough to meet some of the Marcelli clan, the exponential Marcelli clan in Bra, maybe six years ago or 4 years ago now. I met the maker of the Pecorino Gregoriano, Gregorio. He burned me with his cigarette. It was really immediately he like burned me with his cigarette. He was this big, massive sheep guy that like put his arm around me and like scorched me. And then they had this huge drum shaped cheese there that you have a piece of here in the studio. And what's the name of that cheese?
Tritico.
And what does that mean?
It's the three milks. Cow, sheep, and goat.
Sure. What type of cheese is it? Is it a pasta filata? It's not a ricotta. It's a mature cheese, right?
It's a stuffalata.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean,
I like it.
Good. I mean, it's sort of. So I've been there. I was there a couple.
High
times.
High five action. I like that.
I was there a few times when they made it. Basically, it's like – it is actually stretched now that I think about it. It's a good question. So it is stretched and you end up with this big mound, and then they have this huge cylinder that they kind of literally stuff it into. It's huge.
Sure.
It's probably like 2.5 feet tall. And that's how they let it set. And then after that, they tie rope around it, and they will kind of hang it. So exactly, like I didn't even think about that. Is it totally a pasta filata?
Yeah, so it's like a big ragusano almost.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's pulled. It's probably so it it's pulled the brine and then it's hung for a while.
Yep, and then in keeping with all the cheeses that they make and that we carry, all the rinds are natural. You can eat them. So for this one, like if it starts over time while it's aging, it starts to crack. The outside, the skin, they'll just cover it seal it with some honey wax.
That's amazing.
Everything's edible.
Yeah.
So I actually haven't had this in quite a while.
This is my first time having it.
Oh, that's fantastic. And are we going to be able to buy some of this?
Dad?
Yes, Bob's mouth is full. He is chewing. He is chewing and eating the cheese of his family.
Yeah, do you want to be the first customer in the U.S.?
Yeah, I may. I may want to. that's fantastic. Well, you know, you guys, I really want to thank you very much for coming in and taking a little bit of time to spend with me today and to talk about your wonderful family company, of which I am a customer and a friend.
And a friend.
You must like me because you sell me a lot of cheese.
Exactly. We like you a lot, Greg.
So, and likewise, I love the Marcellis. So go and check them out. And if you're lucky enough to own a cheese shop or be near a cheese shop that sells their stuff, you should pick it up. And they make the Marcelli family just makes great stuff, and they make great pasta and honey too. So thanks a lot for tuning in, and we will be back next week with another episode of Cutting the Curd. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola El Whaley, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.